Welcome back to the Smoke and Steak podcast. This is episode 93 of the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. I'm your host, Peter, joined as always by Enric. And we'll be reviewing round number 5 of the Brasileirão. Round number 4 in the group stage in Copa Libertadores and Sudamericana. And talking about all the latest and greatest news coming out of Brazil. But before we get to all of that, we do want to just extend our best wishes to everyone affected by the flooding. It's been insane going on in Rio Grande do Sul, the southern province of Brazil. Just all sorts of really, really horrific stuff going on. The photos are just surreal. And we just want to let everyone know if you're from the region or have someone, you know, we're thinking and praying for you and anyone affected. So it's been uplifting to see everyone kind of get behind this movement, but it's been pretty horrible seeing all the devastation it's caused. So I might drop some links to donations in the description for the episode, but other than that, yeah, it's affecting the Brazilian league as well. The team's not going to be in action until at least the 27th. So that's a small drag in the grand scheme of things. So again, we just want to give our best wishes. Enric, let's start off today with a question. I don't know if you've already seen this on Twitter, but a Twitter account called Datafoot or Datafutch released their survey of the 80 analysts and journalists of the top 100 players in Brazil playing right now. Can you guess who number one is if you didn't already see it?
Can you tell me the team at least he plays for?
Atlético Mineiro.
Paulinho.
Nope, close. Top, I think it was top 10, top 5.
Yeah, is it Hulk?
It's Hulk, yeah. Who would have thought that? Who would have thought that?
Yeah, I didn't see the list, but I'm just very surprised to see Hulk's name. I originally was going to say Hulk, but I said, you know what? Paulinho has been like the main guy for Atlético Mineiro last season and this season, so let's try it out. But I guess my prediction was wrong. So surprising as it is, I'm glad to see Hulk in the top of that list.
Yeah, incredible. As he's nearing 40, but he's still making a huge impact as we've been seeing. But yeah, great little account. Check them out, and I'll refer back to that list because I think there are some absolute joke rankings, which we'll get to. But before we do, Enric, let's stop off really quick. Dorival Jr. will be in front of the press tomorrow, calling the Seleção up. Just really quick flyby. Who do you want to see? Who do you not want to see?
Well, I hope we kind of see the same team that we've been seeing in the last couple of matches for Brazil. I think the team that beat England and die against Spain, if I'm not wrong, was really great. So I know Neymar will be missing. If there's a way he gets called so that potentially he can help himself with the doctors and stuff to play in a final, if we can reach that, I would like to see that. I really doubt Neymar is going to come back. And it's sad that a player of his capability is only silverware for Brazil has been that Olympics and then the Confederation Cup in 2013. The 2019 one didn't even count because he wasn't registered. So I hope at some point, maybe the 2026 World Cup will be it, but you just never know if he's going to win any major competition for Brazil in the future.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope they keep that consistency because you're right. Two surprising games and two surprising really great results against some of the best teams in the world, England and Spain last time. So like to see them do it again. All right, Enric, let's jump into the Brasileirão. It was round 5 of the greatest competition on the planet. 3 games, of course, suspended, those involving the teams from Rio Grande do Sul. So let's start off with Corinthians versus Fortaleza. Corinthians at home in the trenches right now, not looking good. Financials all over the place. More reports coming out this week about the weakness of their financial situation. Hosting Fortaleza, who are in good form, and I think both teams will kind of be okay with this result. They split the points, no goals.
Yeah, and it was a pretty average game by two sides, even though Corinthians came on that very nice win against Fluminense last week, and Fortaleza coming off a draw, I believe, at home. So they get a draw here as well away. Both teams had their chances. Corinthians was actually the first team that heads and smacks the post in the first half, and they do so even in the second half after a shot was saved by the keeper. It rebounds off the post and then it goes wide. So both teams had numerous chances. We saw a couple of 1v1 situations against the keeper. The ball went wide. So again, maybe a 1-1 would have been more fair, but at the end of the day, both of them get the point, which is the only thing that matters for teams surviving and fighting against relegation, especially for Corinthians playing in front of their home stadiums and not surprising them in the wrong way by losing a match against Fortaleza, as they did last season. I think last year when they played here, they lost 2-1. So everybody was talking about it, and it would have been pretty much the same story if that happened 2 or 3 days ago.
Yeah, and I think Fortaleza obviously the better team here, but I think they kind of rode their luck a little bit, and it was nice to see them get a point, because I don't want them to get relegated. A part of me doesn't, I should say. But yeah, so also on Corinthians, of course, everyone's talking about the winger Wesley. I believe reports coming in that there's a whole slew of European clubs interested. 18 million euros is the price tag, and pretty steep for a raw talent, but he's got tremendous potential, and Corinthians need the money. So pretty tumultuous times for Corinthians fans. Let's move on to another tumultuous game here. Fluminense looking to bounce back after that loss to the aforementioned Corinthians. They hosted Atlético Mineiro, one of the most powerful teams in Brazil. And wow, they got off to a screaming start. Fourth minute goal from Hermann Cano, one of the most prolific goal scorers in Brazil, as we've talked about many times. But then things got crazy.
Yeah, they definitely did, especially after that Hermann Cano goal, which came really fast, 4 minutes into the match. It was a really nice run by Marquinhos on the right, former Arsenal player. If people are not familiar with him, obviously we have so many Marquinhos in Brazil and outside of Brazil, but that's the Marquinhos we're talking about, which results to a Hermann Cano goal, who gets injured pretty badly at the same time, but I think at the end of the day, he was okay. Renato Augusto got a second in the second half, making it 2-0 for the home team. And maybe people thought that it was game over. Fluminense seemed to have all points secured until the 73rd minute, where a super sub, Eduardo Vargas, Chile national team player, and a player who has sparked at Atlético Mineiro even last season, he enters the match. I think he subs in for Hulk, or maybe another player, and he scores with the first touch of the ball. What a super sub it was. And 6 minutes later, he heads the ball in to make it 2-2. What an incredible match. Just when people thought that it was over, Fluminense had the 3 points in the bag, Atlético Mineiro comes back and equalizes, Peter.
Yeah, it was such a great call from Gabriel Milito, calling the 34-year-old Chilean. And now at this point in the season, these two goals got him already to his total from last year. So he's going to be looking to be more of a weapon than he was last year. Didn't make too big of an impact, but you're right. He was just the spark plug coming off the bench, ripped them from 2-0 down to back to 2-2, and they almost made it 3-2.
Yeah, and Atlético Mineiro thinking that they had lost the game, Now they see that they scored two and they say, you know what? Let's keep pushing. And I believe it was that exact minute, 79, probably a counterattack just as Fluminense loses the ball. Paulinho almost makes it 3-2, denied by Fabio. And the shot was so powerful that it seemed like as it hit Fabio's hand, it hit the post. But I guess the first one was correct. The ball ends up as a corner kick. And what a game. A player that I wish we got to see more with a hype that he used to bring in Europe, and even when he played for Gremio and LAFC or LA Galaxy in MLS, Douglas Costa, a player that haven't really seen much of him ever since his return. I thought he would be more impactful for Fluminense, but other players like John Arias and John Kennedy that scored in the Copa Libertadores final last year have been more impactful. So I would love to see Douglas Costa regain his form. And honestly, ever since he played for Juventus, he hasn't been the same. I don't know if you remember 2 or 3 years ago, it could have been even 2019. It was Juventus playing against Sassuolo. He spits in a player's face, he gets suspended, and for 4 or 5 games. And ever since then, I don't remember anything out of Douglas Costa. Obviously, I've seen him a little bit playing for LA Galaxy, but haven't seen much from him. The dribbles that he used to do and the player he used to be for Shakhtar Donetsk and Bayern Munich. So I hope he comes back, obviously, with the return of Thiago Silva in the summer for Fluminense. Maybe things are going to change, but so far it's not looking good for him.
Yeah, and that's 15 games now without a goal for Douglas Costa. And yeah, like you said, I mean, this game might be kind of a premonition of things to come. Fluminense with the very old squad. And as you referred to, we just got the official confirmation this week. Thiago Silva is joining in the summer, as we talked about last episode. It's official now, but hey, that's another older guy. And you just wonder with this team, they might just be running out of steam. They might not have the fitness, to last 90 minutes, 98 minutes, whatever the added time is going to be. And teams like Atletico Mineiro, when you've got Paulinho and Vargas coming on for the last, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it was, fresh legs, they might really, leave these guys in the dust. So Atletico Mineiro, it'll feel like a win, even though they just get 1 point. They're undefeated under Milito. That's 8 wins, including Libertadores, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And crazy to see three of those games over that month were derbies against Cruzeiro, 2 wins and a draw. So he's really under his opponent's skin as well. And I also want to just shout out Guilherme Arana. You may remember him outside back, really highly promising. A few years back, went to Europe, came back, and every so often he really starts to get hot and just gets an amazing form. And he's in incredible form right now, contributing on both sides of the ball. Really impressive stuff. All right, Enric, let's shift to another huge match and another one that ends in a draw. Red Bull Bragantino hosting Flamengo. Two teams, very powerful. You saw how good Braga was last year. I think you and I had them falling back down the table, and we all know how Flamengo has been doing this season. They started off red hot, and it's like they slipped on a banana peel recently. But another time, that they drop points here this year. So curious to see how you saw this game leading into it and how it played out.
Well, I'm glad that at least it didn't end up as a loss for Flamengo, because last year when they played here, they lost 4-0 away from home. So at least they get a point out of the game. Red Bull Bragantino are strong, but in my opinion, they're not as strong as last year. So maybe that's the reason why they weren't able to pick up the 3 points despite being very dangerous when playing in the stadium. Pedro Henrique opened the scoring in the 30th minute, although before that it could have been devastating for the home side, as it seemed like a Flamengo player got fouled. It was the last man. A Red Bull Bragantino player got a red card, But then the VAR was called up to the action, and there was originally a foul to the Red Bragantino player. I can't remember the name. So it ends up 11-11 again. Pedro Henrique gets a scoring. In the second half, De La Cruz, he had a crazy 1v1 situation against the keeper, hits it, smacks the crossbar, and 2 minutes later, it's Braga who do the same. But the goal for Flamengo didn't come until the 79th, and what a ball control that was by Bruno Henrique. Great from him, from the lob through ball to score and equalize for Flamengo and pick up that very important point.
Yeah, and I want to double back on that because if you notice earlier in that sequence, it's Gerson who comes back all the way in his own half, playing more forward in this game, which is not the role that I would prefer him in, but wins the ball, fights off two defenders, including one with his strength, and creates the outlet pass that eventually leads to Leo Ortiz, and then ultimately that man that they just paid almost 15 million euros for, Nico De La Cruz. What a pass. And then, yeah, you're rightly praising Bruno Henrique. Crazy, crazy skills there on all three of their parts. And just like that, Flamengo are back in the game 1-1. Really, really impressive stuff. And just to go back to that data foot ranking, Gerson was at 51 on that list. And I nearly fell off my chair because he's one of my favorite players. I think he's one of the best players. I didn't think he was underrated. I thought he was easily one of the best midfielders in the game. But I guess, according to journalists and analysts, he's a little bit underrated. So, got to give him his dues here, because yeah, really impressive stuff from him. And coming back from injury, mind you, first game back in the starting 11.
Definitely. And another match that maybe people didn't really expect, Sao Paulo getting a victory away from home against Vitória. Sao Paulo actually opened the scoring at the end of the first half, or it could have been the beginning of the second half with Luciano. Vitória getting one back with William Oliveira. But then the red card that was originally there since the 7th minute by Wagner Leonardo changed things. Sao Paulo had that hype and thought, let's go for more goals and get those very important 3 points, which they have been able to do very good in the last couple of matches. They did it in Sudamericana. They did it when they played against Atlético Goianiense, which people didn't see them as favorites. So Luciano gets a double. Nahuel Ferraresi, great defender, gets a third goal. So Sao Paulo pick up 3 very important points here away from home.
Yeah, and you mentioned Luciano. He has been incredible. He's gotten, I think, 5 goals in 9 appearances in the Brasileirão and Libertadores. He's been so good. And I saw a great chart of his, I guess he's kind of got this calendar flow to his season where he starts off poor, he goes on an insane run, and then he finishes poor. So São Paulo need him to be a little bit more stable and reliable this year, but I think if he does that, man, they could be really, really impressive. And we'll talk a little bit more about them later in the episode because they punched their ticket to the round of 16 in Libertadores as well. Yeah, they're absolutely cooking. And Vitória, kind of the opposite. We kind of knew they'd be pretty weak. They still continue to look for that first win. Enrique, I feel like we're mentioning Wagner Leonardo's name every week, whether it's a goal or a card or something ridiculous. Always stands out, always doing something to be on that sheet. But also we're obligated, excuse me, to mention he comes from Santos. So a really interesting player there who I think has got some potential, although obviously he's not always making the best decisions. All right, speaking of making poor decisions, Hugo Mora coming back, facing his old club for Vasco. Again, early red card in their loss to Atlético Paranaense. Just 1-0 in it. And Vasco are just in a tailspin. This loss here, they've been losing all over the place. And just this week, it's broke that the company that pretty much owns them, who Everton fans have hated because they're interested in, bringing in more money and and basically purchasing Everton Football Club in England have been accused very seriously of fraud. So the money has kind of dried up, excuse me. There's all sorts of crazy news about them, Ponzi scheme-esque accusations. So that's not going to help Vasco. They've lost their last four. Vasco are in some serious trouble here. I don't know if you want to comment on here or on this game, but I think really the big takeaway is Vasco are in some deep shit.
They seem to, but I would not be surprised if they change the situation like they did last year when they were 19th for 19 weeks, and then the round 38, they find themselves in 16th, 15th spot. So typical Vasco, as we've seen sides like Fortaleza do that in 2022. I'm not surprised if they escape relegation once again.
Yeah, but they had the 777 money last year, and I think that's gone this year. So they did just book a new master sponsor from Betfair, but we'll have to see because they had to make huge changes midway through the year. I don't know if they can do that again, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and we mentioned Douglas Costa for Fluminense. What happened to Payet? He was scoring every week, and even in the Campeonato Carioca, I think he was great. But ever since
Yeah.
Brasileirão restarted, haven't heard his name, haven't seen him. No goals, no assists so far. Vasco situation. You mentioned them, the money coming in last season. Maybe they invested for 2024 too because they saw this coming. But I don't know. It's not looking good for this team. They got to change things up, whether it's the manager that they just sacked, the guy who they brought in, or players, the way how they train and everything. But yeah, Fasco situation, not the one that you would like to be in when you play in the first division.
Absolutely not. All right, let's move on to I think one of the best matches of the match week, if not the best. Two clubs, Botafogo and Bahia. Hot, of course, everyone knows the story about Botafogo last year, but they're just coming off a huge win against their arch rivals, Flamengo. They shocked the world. And now they're at home hosting one of the most upstart clubs in the league, Bahia, of course. We've called them the sleeping giants. We've had Jamie on from the UK, and they made huge signings. And this is kind of a derby of kind of the new age clubs in the Brasileirão. Botafogo, of course, very traditional, as is Bahia. But as far as a national contender year in and year out, I don't think either team has been that in decades and decades. So huge, huge match. Botafogo hoping to keep it up. And they had a great start. Luis Henrique off to the races. What a finish. What a start. And it's offsides. The goal gets called back. And that would kind of be a theme in this one.
Yeah, and that's not the only one that they had disallowed, I believe. In the second half, they also had another disallowed goal, which is very unlucky given the pressure that the home team put in, the chances that they had. But Bahia, on the other side, they take advantage from a penalty kick. Everaldo gets the first goal. Jefinho in the second half equalizes, but they didn't know that another goal was coming. Rafael Ratao makes it 2-1. And Bahia pick up 3 points here. If you remember last week, I said that it's going to be a tough match for Botafogo because they beat Flamengo. So I predicted a draw out of this one. Didn't know that it's going to be a win for Bahia. But typical, as I said last week, Bahia or Botafogo failing to pick up the most important points when it matters, when they're playing those weak sides. And they're definitely doing that against big teams, but they got to do it against small teams as well if they want to compete for top four or for a win.
But Bahia are no small team. I mean, I agree with the sentiment, but Bahia are no small team. They were great. And the Bahia penalty, I mean, it's one of those handballs. Is it intentional? No. Is his arm in the wrong place at the wrong time? I guess. I don't know. It's one of those. But notice who draws the penalty? Santiago Arias, the man they just brought in. Everaldo scores. Great stuff, but I want to talk about the other Botafogo goal that was ruled out. Just an insane no flick. Did you see this from Jefferson Savarino? Back heel, no look flick to Junior Santos. And just, I mean, this skill, I wanted it to be a goal so badly. It was such a satisfying goal. The work on the wing as well, I believe from Jafinha, who would get rewarded later. But just a great finish as well. But that flick from Severino, I mean, just so I think that's a player that I underrated, and I'm not going to make that mistake again. Also, Jefinho's goal, you glossed over that. Golasso, absolute golasso. I don't know if it was on purpose. He might tell you if it's on purpose. It kind of hit his left foot, I think, and flicked up. I don't know if that was on purpose, but if it was, it was incredible. And then the acrobatic finish, and just wow. It was really awesome to see.
Yeah, and also the way how he picked up that ball, the way he ran without being offside, right on the spot, running behind the Bahia defenders, scoring the goal. I wasn't too happy with that guy. I don't know who it was, but he knew he was offside and he still stood without moving. As soon as you see your player, Jefinho, with a ball, with a chance to take a shot, just run away because it's the ball either hits you. Or even if it doesn't hit, if it's anywhere close to you, it's going to be offside because it's blocking the goalkeeper's view, or it's going to impact the way in which he's going to dive. Luckily for Botafogo, the ball goes on the right top bins, I believe, and the player was on the left side, so it didn't, nothing ha crazy happened, but it would have been bad if Botafogo would have ended this match without even scoring at home.
Yeah, and also we have to talk about one of the most incredible moments of the match. Our boy Pete was losing it on Twitter. Humongous chance for Botafogo to really win it. I think in the late stages, in the 70s minutes maybe. Cuiabano, player comes on, has an incredible chance, wide open net. More or less, his eyes must have been as big as dinner plates. And he hits it, and the goalkeeper makes a pretty good stop. The follow-up goes wide, and you could just see it. He knew that, he had just totally scuffed this chance to put them in a great position, for another win. And then this is what happens when you don't finish the play. What happens? Rogério Ceni mimicking Milito with a great substitute. Ratão comes on in the 77th. 10 minutes later, scores the winner. Great breakaway move. Wanted to say this as well. Not comparing the players, but just that move, that step over move with the shimmy and going around the keeper reminded me of Ronaldo R9 in 2006. His record-breaking goal versus Ghana. Was later broken by the German guy Klaus, but he broke the record for World Cup goals in 06 versus Ghana with that same step over around the keeper. Really nice goal from both of them. But in this case, Ratao comes on, wins it. Rogério Ceni, all credit to him and all credit to Bahia, because I thought Botafogo probably on the Deserve-o win-o-meter. Maybe would have been on top, but Bahia finished their chances, made the most of it, and Ceni made the right choices. In as far as substitutes, Bahia, great win, and they put themselves in another great position. All right, last match here. Cuiabá hosting Palmeiras. No surprise here. Palmeiras 2-0. Pretty standard here win. Lázaro and Estevão getting the job done for the Verdão. I think really the news on Estevão and Palmeiras is that Estevão is looks like he's gonna head to Chelsea. People saying that personal terms more or less agreed. Now it's just a matter of crossing the T's and dotting the I's. Until today, reports breaking that Bayern Munich might be trying to hijack the deal. We don't need to speculate on all of that, but I wanted to ask you, Henrik, as far as Chelsea versus Bayern, what do you think is a better fit for Estevao, or is it even too early to tell?
It might be too early to tell. You never know because he's such a young player. He's so talented. And you mentioned two teams. The third one, Barcelona, is a team that he's always expressed he would love to play, but it's very sad that the club hasn't moved forward. Maybe they don't have the money, but at least they can work something out with getting him on loan or something like that. I mean, Enrique moved to Real Madrid for 40 million, and then Vitor Roque came to Barcelona with different installments. So something could have worked out for the club. And it's sad to see him not go to his dream team. And Chelsea, not a fan of them because they get so many players and they always loan them out, as we've seen them with Angelo and the midfielder Andre, is his name, or am I
Yep,
mistaken
Andrés
here?
Santos. Yep.
Andrew Santos at Nottingham Forest. Hopefully he gets chances, but again, Enrique, if anything, Bayern might be his best chance. I don't want to see him at Chelsea, but looking at Bayern since 2010 and ranking those players with the most recent ones, they haven't really had Brazilians playing for them. It's been Douglas Costa, it's been Coutinho in 2020, Rafinha, who currently plays for São Paulo, Dante, Gustavo, and then a guy named Breno, currently 34. I think he finished his career at Vasco in 2019. So not a club that has historically had Brazilians, but all of those Brazilians that I mentioned, they have been one of the best players for them at least for 3 or 4 seasons. So if anything, I would love to see him go to Bayern if that's his last chance to go to Europe.
Yeah, and I think those of those three clubs, I mean, it's there are a lot of different angles you could take. I don't really think any of them have had a great chance or a great time taking talent from other leagues and developing them into first team stars. Chelsea's kind of thrown kind of a spray and pray approach where they've just bought a bunch of players, thrown them at the wall. Those that stick, you know, they're kind of hanging around. Those that kind of stick hang around in Strasbourg, like Angelo and Andrés Santos. And those that don't, you know, end up God knows where. Back to Brazil, usually. So I don't know about Chelsea. Bayern, I think, would be an interesting prospect, but I don't know if I really think that team and the structure there know how to develop the talent. That's not really their MO. They don't like spending big money on flashy players to develop. They kind of develop from within, from European leagues, and then, you know, use trusted first team players. Honestly, I think Barcelona need to dig deep, suck it up, and pay up for Estevao. And I want to see a partnership. And I don't want to see anyone whining on Twitter about, oh, Vitor Roque hasn't scored yet. And I don't want to see their execs, you know, talking shit about Vitor Roque because we know he's going to be a star. I've said it a million times. Vinicius Jr. took time. Rodrigo took time at Real Madrid. Even Éder Militão took time. He went to Benfica before. So I think the best fit would be in Barcelona. I think they still do have, if they can resist pressure, you know, the facilities to develop the talent. I think it's a little bit more agreeable with Brazilian culture. And yeah, I would love to see an Estevao and Vitor Roque link up versus, you know, Endrick, Vinicius, and Rodrigo. So that's my take. But yeah, so Palmeiras crushing Cuiabá, and they continue to do well in the Brasileirão. 8 points in their first five games. I think they'll really get into the you know, get back into their form. They haven't lost, or excuse me, they have one loss. I think they'll get back into better form and continue to do well. But Enric, as we look at the table, it's hard to say anything this early, and especially with all these teams. I'm looking 4 games played, 3 games played, for Criciúma. But Atlético Paranaense at the top of the table, Bahia number two, both with 10 points. And even Botafogo with two losses, still in third place, Atlético Mineiro in fourth. So we've got some early leaders. And I'm curious to hear your take on the table, maybe other teams that you are surprised at. Yeah, any other thoughts you have on the table as it stands?
Yeah, as you mentioned, Atlético Paranaense are now leaders, so great to see them in the first place alongside Bahia. Criciúma, although they have 3 matches played with 5 points, no losses so far, if they manage to win the 2 games in hand, they would sit with 11 points, so they would be the potential leaders of round 5. So I would love to see that happen. Fluminense and Vasco, as we mentioned, haven't really performed well. Vasco only has 3 points in 5 matches, a win. And Fluminense, right above them, escaping relegation at the moment, 5 matches, 5 points. So both teams underperforming when you look at the big teams that play in the Brasileirão.
Yeah, and also both those teams you mentioned tied for most amount of goals conceded with Cuiabá. Cuiabá dead last, of course. All three of those teams have conceded 10 goals. Cuiabá have yet to score, so that's looking pretty bad for them. All right, Enric. Serie B, let's do a quick drive-by because another match week, another Santos victory, 4-1. They conceded their first goal of the tournament. Didn't want them to, but hey, that's what happens when you face Guarani, local São Paulo rival. São Paulo or Santos really doing well alongside Sport Recife, two undefeated teams, 9 points out of 9 available. What are your thoughts here on Santos and the Serie B season so far?
Well, as you said, I don't think it's a situation of versing Guarani and conceding. It's a situation of scoring 4 and then conceding because we've seen all the teams do that whenever they have so many goals scored, which is incredible, by the way. I never expected Santos to perform like this before the match started. I thought that this was actually going to be the game that was going to produce a draw or a loss at home, which seemed to be the case. Guarani attacked us so much in the first half. They had chances of scoring, but luckily for us, we take the advantage early in the 32nd minute with Guilherme. 4-1 is a score sheet that we love seeing. As the season is going so far, 3 matches, 9 points, and so do Sport Recife. And one of the things that I love from the schedule that we have is that it's going to be match week 19 and match week 38 when we get to play them. So hopefully until the match week 37, we have already won Serie B. I don't want to see a last match rivalry between the top two teams fighting who's going to win the championship. Hopefully Santos does it ahead of time. And then another thing, we're recording on Thursday, and just before we started recording, we had Europa League with Bayer Leverkusen winning their 49th match. So I was actually thinking, who knows, maybe Santos is going to have that 38 matches in Serie B if we manage to not lose any of them. And then the next 10 matches in the Campeonato Paulista, we might be one of the teams that everyone's talking about all over the world. So I would love to see the eyes of many football fans turning to Brazil, and not only Brazil, Brazilian second division team Santos, such a historic team. So let's wait and see. Little by little, I think we can do it. And all we got to do is avoid defeat, and things are set for us to reach that record that Bayer Leverkusen has been achieving so far.
Well, as we're only 3 games into it, I think we may be a little getting ahead of ourselves, but would be great to see. And also great to see our picks, Santos and Sport, doing well. All right, Enric, let's shift over to the premier continental competition. We've got Copa Libertadores, Brazilians playing all over the continent. But let's start in Argentina. I don't have too much to say here. We've already praised Gabriel Milito sufficiently, I think. Atlético Mineiro beating Rosario Central in a last-minute effort from Paulinho. They're top of the group, 4 wins from 4. Great stuff. They're perfect in the group. They're on cruise control, and honestly, I don't have too much else to say about them. They're looking great in this competition, and I think they're a real contender.
Yeah, and I think that win might have ensured them the first spot. Obviously, they're qualified for the knockout stages, but They might have even won the first spot in the group ahead of Peñarol, who are fighting against Rosario Central and maybe even Caracas, but I don't think Caracas has any chance of even getting the third place in this group. So Atlético Mineiro doing very well, 4 games, 4 wins, and +6 goal average, which is exactly the +6 points difference that they have against Uruguayan rivals. So looking pretty good for them as a team. On the other side, though, Flamengo struggling yet again. They haven't looked good. They tied the first match against Millonarios, won against Palestino, I believe, and then lost to Bolivar, now lose to Palestino away from home. Every time I see Flamengo and Chile, I just remember Arturo Vidal. Maybe Arturo would have loved to be part of this team instead of Colo, where he gets to play against Fluminense, but I don't know. Flamengo not doing very good so far.
Yeah, and let's take some time here because this is a lot to unpack. Flamengo's wage budget apparently 26 times as big as Palestino's. The transfer fee of Nicolas Dela Cruz alone, that 14.5 million, is higher than the reported market value of the entire roster for Palestino, according to Transfermarkt. I think it's something like 12 million euros. So just a total David and Goliath situation. But I want to say there are some mitigating factors. A lot of people may have seen the result, and yes, it's horrible. You're right. They have every especially when you look at the roster. Everton was back. De La Cruz was playing. They had Gerson back, obviously. But they still lost. And it wasn't as if they had a few stars and youth players. This was a game they should have won, of course. Yes. They were sloppy, they weren't focused. But Palestino playing at home. They had the rain on their side. Palestino, kind of a good team, second in the league. And Enric, most importantly, what an insane goal. What an insane goal. One of the goal of the tournament so far, maybe. Fernando Cornejo, Chilean player, son of Fernando Cornejo, I think from the 90s and 80s, who is another Chilean footballer, played for the national team. So he's got a great pedigree. But just an insane, insane volley goal. I don't know if you caught that. It just an incredible, incredible goal. And I think that was really, I mean, it was the difference maker, literally. But I think Flamengo would have been totally happy with the draw. They got stuck with just a wonder goal, and this is what happens.
Yeah, and I would like to say, despite having so many matches played since Saturday all the way up to even today, there's 2 matches that I watched total live. It was Santos beating Guarani and then this Palestino Flamengo game. And when I saw that goal from a corner kick, it heads back to one of the Palestino players outside the box, one-time hit, top bins, unbelievable. If that doesn't win goal of the tournament, and maybe it even wins the best goal in the world for 2024, you never know. It's just
Yeah.
incredible for a team in that a team like Palestino, nobody even thought that they could even finish fourth because there's better teams ahead of them, even Millonarios, who are currently fourth with 2 points.
Yeah.
But the situation is not looking good. 4 games, 4 points, third place. Bolivar on the other side have 10, so they're pretty much secured promotion, but they tied the match against Millonarios 1-1. If they managed to win that one, they would have had 12 and not have to worry about Flamengo or Palestino in their upcoming matches. But Flamengo, they need some luck because if they don't get a Palestino loss, it's not going to be looking great for them. And despite them potentially winning both of their next matches, Palestino could and their hopes, and we might see Flamengo and Sudamericana pretty soon.
Now that would be crazy. That would be a very strange thing to see, kind of like Boca in Sudamericana this year. But I wanted to ask you, a lot of Chiche hate online after the losses to Botafogo recently. the draw with Red Bull Bragantino. Now this loss, how do you think about Gigi? Because I'm seeing and getting tweets that he's a fraud, that he's just living off the back of his Corinthians hype and the Mundial win in 2012. The same people criticizing him for the very real failings in the World Cup. How do you feel about Chiche, and what do you think it would take to get him fired?
Listen, in Brazil, there's always drama, especially when a team doesn't win. A team of Flamengo's capacity has not been performing well, but a month ago, we were considering him the best coach in Brazil and maybe on the continent without having a loss in the Campeonato Carioca. And despite this is a bad start, who knows? Maybe it's going to turn up as one of the best seasons Flamengo has always had because it's very early to judge. And we know for a fact that a team is going to go through a tough stage like this, and it's very good for Flamengo to be going through that now compared to having that happen against teams like Olimpia, eliminating them in the round of 16 or quarterfinals of Sudamericana. So as long as they qualify for the knockout stages, they should be good, and I'm still expecting a pretty impressive season for Flamengo. So Flamengo fans should not have any worry, especially when they have a coach like Tite, who was in the national team, and I think he is still the best coach currently in Brazil.
I totally agree with that. I think a lot of people are being sucked into the prisoner of the moment takes. I really believe in Chiche, and you're totally right. Your point on the adversity, I think, is the most important point, if I can speak, because every championship team needs to face that adversity in some way or another before they get to those moments that are really going to define their season. Because if they have been on an easy ride, not focused, when they come to those points, like you saw with Botafogo last season, where they really need to dig deep physically and more than that, mentally, they need to know how to handle adversity. And this is where it happens. So I still have faith in them, and I still think they're favorites to win both Copa Libertadores and the Brasileirão.
And even more clearly, we saw it in the World Cup, Argentina losing to Saudi Arabia. People even considering, and even me, I doubted them passing the group. I thought something else would have happened. They had a tough match against Poland and so against Mexico. And many people didn't expect them to make it pretty far. And look at them, current champions. So I don't want to say Flamengo are going to be champions. I think we've already done our predictions, which differ from each other, but Flamengo still, in my opinion, will have a great season, as we mentioned. So there shouldn't be any worry.
All right. Well, two more Brazilians getting wins. These pretty straightforward. Botafogo 2 over Liga de Quito. I don't know what's going on with Liga de Quito. We have to check in with Martin Benitez, our buddy from Ecuador, living over there. Actually, he's from the US. They get beaten by Botafogo. They're bottom of the group. But still with a chance to progress. Botafogo riding Junior Santos. We talked about him. He's so good early in the competition. He's still got 9 goals and an assist in his first 8 appearances in Libertadores, 15 goals in 23 matches in all competitions. So he's just playing out of his mind. And then São Paulo, relatively straightforward win against Chilean side Cobresal. The Chileans would score first, but then the São Paulinos would score 3 more times. Luciano, Rodrigo Nestor, actually. Remember, I think devotees will remember his very important goal last year in Copa do Brasil. And then Jonathan Caleri as well, scoring for São Paulo. So they lock up their progression into the round of 16. Really like their squad. And their coach, you'll remember, just brought him in. Carpini wasn't cutting the mustard for them, but Zubeldia coming in, younger guy, undefeated in his first 5 matches, though their opponents may not be the best, but very nice. to see that, and they'll be in the round of 16. They've won their last three in this competition, so who knows? And I wanted to ask you, Henrik, do you see them as a challenger for the trophy, or just another fly that a Flamengo or Palmeiras or Galo will have to swat aside?
When I watched Sao Paulo, first game of 2024, they played in the Paulista. I saw them as champions, the way how they played, the way how they started the competition. And at the end of the day, we all know that it didn't end up as I expected it to. But Sao Paulo is a big team, and I don't think they're gonna finish a year without impressing people. And it could be Copa Libertadores. They've been doing very good, and although they have 9 points, they will play Talleres of Argentina at home as their fifth or sixth match. So they have a chance to finish the group in the first place if they win both of those matches. So looking good for São Paulo and also for Botafogo that you mentioned, currently with 6 points. Something funny that I just noticed is that even though they have dropped points, they lost two matches. They won two, lost two, zero draws. And also, if you look at their Brasileirão run, they also have 3 wins and 2 losses, no draws. So pretty much the same scenario that we used to see from Botafogo last year. I think it took them like 15 weeks last season to get the first draw, which came against Santos, if you remember, at Vila Belmiro 2-2. So pretty much the same story here. They hate tying the games. They either get the win or get the loss. So I like that mentality from the team. I'm pretty sure that they can advance, but the situation can be said about Grêmio, who have a postponed match against Huachipato. The team is very, very bad at the moment. I believe currently fourth, and if they don't win this one, it's pretty much game over.
Yeah, and maybe we should spend a little bit more time, or maybe we'll talk about this in episodes to come, but of just the impact of the floods and the disaster relief and the everything on the football on the pitch. Of course, it goes without saying the suffering and the tragedy is primary, but it will have an effect on the team. They're not training, they're out of rhythm, and I think it's really going to be tough for clubs like Internacional, Juventude and Grêmio to come back, and Grêmio might be headed to the Sudamericana, which is fine by me, because I believe you'll remember that I predicted them in the Sudamericana final. All right, Fluminense host, or excuse me, are away to Colo-Colo later tonight, and then finally Palmeiras beat up on Liverpool of Uruguay. Liverpool, of course, have the flashy young talent Luciano Rodriguez. I think he's destined for Europe. But he couldn't do anything against the onslaught from Palmeiras. Rafael Veiga, cheeky little double. Endrick scoring because, of course, he does. Gustavo Gomez scoring from the penalty spot because, of course, he does. And, of course, got to mention it, Henrik, your boy, Rony scoring as well. So, just an all-around comprehensive disemboweling of Liverpool by Palmeiras, as we'd expect. Palmeiras, really scary, I think, in this competition. And I think even with Endrick gone, I think they'll probably bring in another striker. They've got Felipe Anderson coming in. And also, oh, by the way, they've got Flaco Lopez, who scored, I don't know, 10 million goals in this year's Paulista. So just an incredible team. And I think they're going to be dangerous as well. Any thoughts on them as we look ahead?
Yeah, Palmeiras looking pretty good in first place. All their opponents respectively have 4 points, so they basically got in that first spot in the group. Rony on the other side, he did not score last week. I hope you saw that chance that I sent you on Twitter where Esteban was preventing him from a goal, but at least he got one here. It's 5-0 for Palmeiras. They pick up very important 3 points, so credit for them to getting this huge scoreline away from home against the Uruguayan team. And I know Uruguayan teams haven't been doing great in continental competitions, but I would love to see that happen in the future. Because when you think of South America, it's Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay as the main team or the main countries, but we don't get to see that competition in the Libertadores or Sudamericana usually. it's Peñarol and that's it. Nobody else is competing in this country. So hopefully in the future, teams like Liverpool will turn out to be like the Liverpool of England.
Yeah, I think Nacional has had a few runs where they've looked powerful. I think actually even better than Peñarol as of late. But yeah, you're right. I'd love to see those big two get back in the mix on the continent, and same for a club like Liverpool. All right, Copa Sudamericana, Brazilians in action, and they almost had a perfect record. Corinthians beating Nacional, this time of Paraguay. So they are looking likely to progress, although who knows? Arkan Juniors are one of their bogey teams, so it's hard to see that. And even progression on the continent, I don't know if that's the best thing for their rest of their out hopes. Cruzeiro beat up on Alianza of Colombia, a lot of name sharing with these teams. Atlético Paranaense and Gonzalo Mastroianni continues to ball. They beat up on the Venezuelan side, Rayo Zuliano. Cuiabá even getting a big win against the Venezuelan side, Metropolitanos, 3-0 over them. But all came crashing down. No perfect match day for Brazil. Nacional Potosí, the Bolivians hosting, of course, Fortaleza, 4-1 victory. Their first loss of the competition. Doubling or tripling the amount of goals they've conceded in their first four matches. They're still in first place, even over a club like Boca Juniors. Impressive stuff. Of course, Bolivians will have their absolute fortress. Nacional Potosi, I'll have to remind everyone, I believe has the highest stadium registered to play in CONMEBOL competition. There's a bit of a mental battle and of course the physical battle on the pitch. But yeah, pretty close to a perfect match day for the Brazilians. Enric, any closing thoughts on Sudamericana?
Sudamericana is looking pretty good so far. Corinthians, despite being currently second, I still think that they're not going to make it. Argentinos Juniors are going to turn up and be the Argentinians that played last season in Libertadores. Cruzeiro on the other side, very important 3 points away from home after three consecutive draws, including a 3-3 draw against Union La Calera, I believe. Or, yeah, I think that's the team that they tied 3. So, Atlético Paranaense definitely doing very great in the competition. 4 matches, 4 wins, 16 goals scored, only 2 conceded. So, they have qualified, I think, for the next round. And Fortaleza getting that loss away from home. Maybe people would expect a 1-0 or a 2-1 loss, but 4-1, come on. Like, after you beat Boca Juniors, you can't be doing that because Nacional Potosi will keep doing causing harm even to teams like Boca Juniors. Who knows? And maybe they can get that second spot. Boca Juniors' situation might not be looking good. And then Cuiabá reminds me of Goiás last season. I think they pretty much finished the same way, 16th, 15th in the table, making it to Sudamericana, surprising couple teams. So they still don't have a loss despite playing against an Argentinian team like Lanús. So Cuiabá currently in first place. They are doing pretty well here.
Yep, yeah. And routing out Sudamericana, Internacional's game, of course, is postponed. Red Bull Bragantino and Racing from Argentina are clashing as we speak. All right, Enric, great episode. Let's close with looking ahead to this weekend's Brasileirão matches. Of course, we've got some postponements. Criciúma postponing. They're also in the south and affected. Atlético Mineiro versus Grêmio postponed, of course, as well as the Porto Alegre duel, Internacional hosting Juventude. So all three of those games postponed. But we've got some huge, huge matches. Enric, which of these big clashes are you thinking that you're definitely going to be tuning into? What are some other matches that people can take a look at to really be entertained? Or what are your thoughts on this current docket?
Well, I have four big matches in mind. None of them are derbies, but at least we get to see a São Paulo team against the Rio de Janeiro team, starting with Flamengo and Corinthians, and also São Paulo against Fluminense. So these two matches I would consider the biggest two. And then third would be Palmeiras hosting Atlético Paranaense, including Fortaleza against Botafogo. We very well remember the 4-2 win for Fortaleza last year, I believe, that ended Botafogo's hopes for winning the competition. But then you get teams like Internacional Juventude, who again is postponed. And I believe this is the match that we talked about last week, Copa do Brazil. So
Yeah.
two different competitions and two teams that would have been playing each other within a week. So I still think Internacional can definitely win both of them, but I wouldn't be surprised of a surprising result from Juventude, as we've seen them in the Campeonato Gaúcho when they eliminated Internacional.
Yeah, and Flamengo versus Corinthians, of course, the two most well-supported clubs in the nation. Just insane amounts of people support one of these two clubs. It's really incredible and mind-boggling. So that's a huge, huge derby. Love the call about Fortaleza versus Botafogo. Also, Bahia facing Red Bull Bragantino. We talked about Bahia and Botafogo and how they're it's kind of a two of the biggest up-and-coming clubs. Well, this is again another version for that. Bahia this time will be at home, so Red Bull Braga will have their hands full there, and São Paulo I think a really chance to turn the screws on Fluminense. Fluminense slowly, I think, drifting from just stagnant and poor to a full-on crisis that could maybe even see Fernando Diniz lose his job. But of course, he's got more than enough, footballing knowledge, IQ to resurrect this team. So his trickiness and style might be enough to at least get a result against São Paulo. So tons of get matches to be intrigued by, to watch, and to, of course, enjoy. And that, I think, is a podcast. So thanks everyone so much for listening. I think I teased the interview last time, but we do have it coming. There were a few technical difficulties on my part, so I'll take blame for that. We've got that coming to look forward to. A few more interviews lined up. So lots of good content coming from the Smoking Snake. But once again, thank you for listening, and everyone, have a great night.